You must tell me all your secrets. Remember, we must share everything together.
Hello again, you're listening to a Girls Guts and Giallo bonus episode, and I'm here once again with Gretchen, who was on one of the main episodes. We talked about The Devils. That's a lot of people's favorite recent episode, and we're back talking about the French horror film Raw from 2016. So, hi Gretchen.
Hi, Annie. Thank you so much for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. Can you remind people who you are and what your perverted little self does?
So I'm a horror author and a movie critic, and I mostly write about and watch horror. And, you know, I was just telling you before we started recording, I actually saw this movie when it came out, and I had basically no feelings about it. And then I rewatched it maybe half an hour before getting on this call with you, and I fucking loved it.
Yeah, it's really great. You know, it was one of those things where 2016 was so wretched. Not that it's any better now, but I feel like we were all just like living in absolute, I don't know if we like were ready for this movie when it came out. Like, it was, I appreciate it a lot more now and appreciate it a lot more in repeat viewings. And this month on my Patreon, I'm doing a new French Extremity directed by women. So Raw falls into that category. It's directed by Julia DeSorno, and I'm sorry, I'm probably going to butcher everyone's names.
Yeah, fully seconded.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's fine. And starring Garance Marlier, Ella Rumpf, and Rabah Naïd Ofila. So I'm sorry to all of you wonderful actors.
Yeah, they really do kill it.
Yeah, they do. They're great in it. So the plot follows a young vegetarian's first year at veterinary school when she tastes meat for the first time in a hazing ritual and awakens to her own cannibalism. So this film premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival, aka TIFF, and some audience members fainted. Ambulances were brought in. And this is significant because TIFF has been really instrumental in making the new French extremity genre as popular and as recognized as it is now. And part of that has to do with one of the programmers, Colin Geddes. So a lot of this knowledge I'm getting from the book on New French Extremity by Alexandra West, who is one of the women who runs the podcast Faculty of Horror. So I just started reading this book, her book for this month. And this I didn't know before I started reading the book. So Gretchen, when you hear New French Extremity, what does that mean to you?
You know, I immediately think of movies like Trouble Every Day or Interior. Movies that are purposefully about pushing human extremity as far as it goes.
Right.
What is the most extreme and painful and nauseating experience you can imagine going through? And then how faithfully can you recreate it on film and make the audience feel it?
Yes, it's all about, and that's something that Alexandra West talks about in her book too, is this idea of making the audience feel the horror.
Cinema of sensation, baby.
What'd you say?
I said it's the cinema of sensations, baby.
Yes, and also directly related to Artaud's theater of cruelty concept. So the new French extremism is a term coined by the art forum critic James Quant for a collection of transgressive films by French directors at the turn of the 21st century. Quant was actually using the term in a derogatory and unfavorable manner, but this clutch of directors kind of like ran with it, reclaimed it. And
I mean, it's the same thing anytime anyone has ever tried to paint a movie as, you know, participating in the destruction of popular morality or whatever, inevitably either it will prove out that the world actually is that bad or the world will rise to the occasion.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it was originally a disparaging term, but it's like such a popular subgenre of horror. And it originally started as an art house movement with films like I Stand Alone, Sombra, Baisse-moi, and Romance, which are not strictly horror films. So in the beginning of the New French Extremity movement, it's these like art house films that are exploring extreme and violent topics. And then the latter half of the movement becomes pure horror, like Calvaire, Shaitan, Martyrs. I just rewatched High Tension last night. Side note, cannot fucking believe I watched that movie as a 13-year-old because I saw it.
I've actually never seen it.
Oh my God. I saw it when it came out. So I thought I was 15 when I saw it, but I know I saw it like very shortly after it came out on DVD. So I looked, it actually came out in 2003. And so that means I was watching it as like a 13-year-old. And watching it last night, I mean, please, Gretchen, maybe go watch it. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I mean, it's gay and extremely violent, and it may be one of the most violent movies I've ever seen. Still,
all right, well,
still extreme. Like, I watched it last night and I was like still gobsmacked by how absolutely like abject and violent it is. So it would seem as though we're still experiencing the new French extremity movement, because I would definitely put Raw in that category, and it came out in 2016. So it's like we're still living that this art movement. Quote from Julia DeSarno: I am very, very interested in bodies. I really like to film them, and I like to use the bodies of my characters in order to talk about their psyche. What I love about body horror grammar, interesting term, is that if you turn off the sound on your TV and you watch the movie, not only do you still understand the plot, you also understand what's happening inside that character and how they're feeling, because it's portrayed on their skin and on their body. That goes back to what you were saying about making the viewer experience this horrible thing.
Right. There's that, you know, there's so much of this in this movie particularly, but it's ubiquitous to this kind of cinema of the extreme. Tiny, minute, but extremely painful and relatable physical experiences. You know, think of like the broken toenails in Black Swan, or, you know, the itching of the rash or the peeling off of the flaking skin. These are like things that we all know how to at least extrapolate toward. And it's a great entry point for making us prepared to flinch from even more extreme sensations. And I do think DeSarno deploys, and I think that's an interesting term, the grammar of body horror, because there is a symbolic language going on in this film. Like when Justine has this terrible rash after eating meat for the first time, and she goes to the nurse and has it like slowly, systematically picked off, it's metamorphosis. She's coming out of a cocoon.
Right.
And it's such an, they never say anything like that because you don't need to, you showed us.
Right.
It's brilliant. There's actually very, very little discussion of any kind of like mythos or rules in this movie, which I love.
I do too. I really, one of my hugest pet peeves is like too much exposition.
Yeah, I don't want to fucking hear how a vampire is created or something. That's bullshit to me. I don't care.
Well, yeah, and that's part of why I love European horror is because American horror can be so heavy-handed with that. 'Cause,
Very pedantic. It's
yeah.
very like a bad thing is something unnatural that emerged into the world through a mistake. Whereas Europe is like, yeah, the world is terrible.
The world is a mistake. So, yeah, and that's what Alex West talks about in her book too, is, France is such a violent history. Which is why, and so does the US, but we pretend that we don't.
Well, we're like Victorian England in that regard. We have a very consciously oriented popular culture and popular idea of ourselves as a sort of antiseptic. And it's been a success in terms of like, whatever you want to call it, branding or brainwashing. There's now, I mean, American popular culture is sexless, it's bloodless, and that kind of thing I think permeates popular imagination too, the way we think about ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, French, I have so many biases against French people. But
Sure, yeah, who doesn't?
yeah. But something I've always appreciated in particular about French feminism, which is why I think New French Extremity directed by women is so interesting to me, is this ability to hold so many nuances. In a way that like American feminism is so binary and
Right, you're either good or you're bad.
you're good or you're bad, you're an abuser or you're a victim.
Right, whereas in this movie, Justine's coming to terms with her agency and her appetites exacts a terrible toll on the people around her,
Yes.
and is shown to be part of a larger lineage of this kind of sort of solipsistic viciousness.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, also this idea that like the liberation of women is going to be bloody and violent and not, Mother Gaia holding hands.
No, it's Maenads. It's shrieking, demented, naked women in the wild, tearing people apart.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just like once Justine is finally able to be away from her family in this way and like become her own person, like it's a horrible and violent process, as anything revolutionary is going to be necessarily.
Precisely, because you can't leave the edifice of what came before in place.
Exactly. It has to be destroyed. And it will destroy you in that process as well. So, I have this review quotes from Alexandra Heller Nicholas, who's another writer that I love. And she reviewed this film back when it came out. And she said, Raw is a hugely sophisticated and deeply intelligent movie that shrewdly deploys generic codes and conventions in its near manifesto-like exploration of individual choice, the value of experience, and most of all, the discovery of one's own humanity. And I just really, this made me think about the movie so differently because, the violence is so front and center. That I didn't automatically perceive this film as like a film about choice.
Right. And why I'll set it during this extremely storied and coercive period of hazing at this school that also her parents went to and that her older sister goes to.
Yes.
She's being put into the mold that produced all those people.
Yes. Oof. Yeah, it's extremely layered. There's so many elements here. So another quote from Alexandra Haller-Nicholas. From Claire Denis' Trouble Every Day to Maria Devan's In My Skin, cannibalism is by no means a new way for French women directors to interrogate notions of identity, place, and agency. Yet to consider these three films any kind of trilogy of sorts does them a great disservice, ignoring the vital ways that they deviate. Ducerneau's Raw lacks the deliberate frenzy of Denis' film and the conscious introspection of Devan's, and instead opts for a unique sense of determination. Justine's plight at times feels like someone trying to solve a puzzle as she negotiates her way not only through the complex and often fraught relationships with her friends and family, but with her own body, her sense of who she is, what she's capable of, and what she can accept, and what ultimately she cannot. So let's talk about some of the themes explored in this quote-unquote arresting film.
I mean, for sure there's the idea of virginity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like my first question for you. So when Justine enters the same vet school that her older sister also attends, she has never tasted flesh, both in a vegetarian and a virginal sense. So she's completely virginal in both ways, sexually and never eaten meat. So once Justine is forced to taste meat in this intense hazing ritual, which I found extremely triggering, I was like, no one's ever going to fucking haze me. Are you fucking kidding me? She begins to develop a craving for flesh, to consume it sexually and through mastication, the two often colliding. So what is Raw saying about the relationship between meat and sex and vegetarianism and virginity?
Well, I mean, to eat meat, as we do in our culture, is to take something you need from the body of something that is subject to you. And I think that sexuality, when you decouple it from interpersonal connection, can be the same. You know, I mean, she is not learning that she has a sexuality in the context of talking to other people or exploring in a safe place. You know, she's discovering it in the context of being forced into it and having this rapid awakening of feelings that she's never had to deal with and that she's been abused into actively repressing. I mean, we meet her mother only a handful of times, but it's pretty clear what's going on in that house.
Yeah. I mean, the beginning scene, right, where she's with her parents and they get served meat and her mom makes like a big deal of it.
Right, you know, goes to yell at the cashier.
It's do you think that this is an indictment of vegetarianism in some ways? Like, I know it's symbolic, but it's an intense comparison.
I do think that it's not impossible that the ways in which vegetarians sometimes pretend to a moral superiority, the conditions of which things like farm labor do not actually afford them, could be on Ducerneau's mind.
Yes.
You know, there's a prissiness and a primness to the vegetarianism in this movie.
And it's also linked to this, you know, it's not spelled out, it's not said explicitly, but it's also linked to this kind of like white woman fragility and feminism. Like, you know, when Justine compares a monkey being raped to a woman being raped and the other women at the table look at her like, are you fucking crazy? You know,
right.
It's at the same time, though, you know, Justine says, like, we're all going to school to be vets. Like, why is that such a crazy thing for me to think? You know, it's complex here because these people at the school, the students at their school, are so cruel to each other. And so the way that the scenes with the animals are handled that they're treating, the cows, the horses, very subjugated animals and coded as very subjugated in our culture, is very is not warm, is not, there's no like passion for animals there.
No, these people have like no emotional relationships to the animals around them. Even, you know, the family dog. which plays an incidental role in a plot point later on, is put down, and no one really seems to have any feelings about it other than mild amusement.
Right. It's very hypocritical because it's like, Justine is kind of exhibiting this kind of naive and precious understanding of agency and rights. And
right.
At the same,
and then the second it touches your life.
Right. Yeah. At the same time, it's, you know, why are they there at that school if they don't care about animals? Yeah. So it's
right.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, this film argues with itself a lot.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's crucial that it's showing us a bunch of people who don't really care where they are or what they're doing. You know, again, it goes back to choice. These are people doing what's expected of them. They are people doing what they happen to have an aptitude for. There's even there's that professor who keeps giving Justine a hard time for being a really good student, who doesn't let people cheat off of her. And he's just like, you know, you're a piece of shit. You come in here and all my other students feel worse about themselves because you're good at what you do.
Yes. Yeah. What about that character? He's only shows up a couple times.
Yeah. Basically both times just to, like, nag her.
Yeah. Just to be mad at her for doing too well. I mean, she seems to be the only person at that school who cares about her work.
Yeah.
So, it's so funny to me because I'm like, this is such a party school, and you forget that it's vet school,
right?
It's and
until,
like,
you see someone with their hand up a cow's ass,
exactly, like very graphically, yeah. And the way that the students use animal parts in their hazing rituals, it's so, you know, dehumanizing of their patients, right? And of the and of the other students. So, speaking of, we're talking about this idea of choice, and I wanted to talk about in particular this scene where Justine goes to the school doctor for the horrible rash that she's developed overnight. It's really disgusting scene where she has an allergic reaction to eating a rabbit kidney that she was forced to eat in the hazing ritual. And this queer-coded dykey doctor tells her a story about a patient she treated who was experiencing medical fat phobia. No one would treat her, you know, saying, oh, her arms are too fat to find a vein or whatever. And I'm not sure that I've ever actually seen medical fat phobia discussed in a film that wasn't like a documentary or something explicitly about fatness.
I never have.
Yeah.
I teared up.
Yeah, it's a very interesting scene because it's these two thin women discussing this thing that you and I both experience. And I kind of always assume that thin people, like, don't talk about fat people or don't think about us or, like, don't.
Right. Unless it's to be like, oh, that's so sad.
Exactly. Yeah. So what did you make of that scene and how it fit into the larger narrative and themes in Raw?
I mean, I think it was, you know, another thing about conformity. She talks about how the reason that this fat girl that she treated didn't make a stink was that she didn't want to stand out any more than she already did by virtue of her body. And I think the point she's trying to make to Justine is like, the reason you ate this fucking thing you knew would make you sick is because you kind of don't have a spine. And Justine doesn't really get that.
Right.
You know, no one, in the end, no one made her do it. She just weighed the consequences and went with the flow. But as for why specifically they choose medical fat phobia, that's so interesting to me because everything I know about France culturally suggest that it's just as bad or worse.
It's way worse. Yeah.
That it's like a very viciously fatphobic culture.
Yeah, so it's an extremely intentional decision, I feel like.
Right. The only fat bodies we see in the movie are incidental. You know, right. They appear briefly in background shots. So I honestly don't know what to make of it. I mean, you know, this is a depressing idea, but what if it's like so deeply cruel that it went right over our heads? I don't know.
We're traumatized. Yeah, we're like,
I don't actually think that's true. I think it's a well-intentioned scene. But I don't know. I mean, I guess the idea that De Sarno, who's also, you know, a thin white French woman, might care about fat people and their experiences is very difficult for me to get my head around.
Yeah, I mean, the doctor clearly does. You know, she's like disgusted by this story of this person being mistreated. And I think it's also very intentional that she's coded as kind of this like over it dyke.
Right. You know, she's someone who's not doing what everyone else is doing.
Yes, exactly. Including dehumanizing fat people. So, which I think, you know, it's actually kind of it's a deep statement because fat phobia is so normative in French culture. And it's like an accepted thing, as it is here, that you would, I mean, less so here, to be honest, but that you would hate fat people. So that's just like a symbol of her nonconformity and the hypocrisy of these students and doctors who are supposed to care about and treat people and animals and treat them with such cruelty.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think I really fully grasped the gravity of that scene the first time I saw it.
It's intense. It's very emotional.
It is, yeah. And right, Justine, it just completely goes over her head.
Right.
So the sister relationship in this film is of particular interest.
Yeah, that's the way you could put it.
They're really competitive. It's incestually queer coded. I was wondering if you had any immediate thoughts or impressions surrounding this weird incestuous kind of relationship in the film.
So I think for siblings from an abusive home where there's a lot of rigidity and control and rules, there is a feeling of scarcity because there actually is not enough love and attention to go around. And if there are rules for how to be a good person, then someone is always going to be more in line with them and another person won't be. So I think that plays its part. You know, they both are jealous of each other and competitive with each other. And I think on the older sister's part, Alex, you know, Justine is the golden child. She's been good. She's brilliant. She's a fantastic student. And in a way, I think Alex wants to pull Justine into her world and make her more human.
Yeah.
And the ways that she knows how to do this are like beautification in the Western sense, like, you know, showing her which hair you're not supposed to have on your body.
And inducting her into womanhood.
Right, right.
Which is positioned painful as like punishing and violent. Yeah.
Right. And it's also positioned sexually, like when she's waiting on the bed to be given a Brazilian wax and it you know, it looks like she's ready for someone to climb onto her. And then particularly in a later scene where they fight and they're biting each other and they're, at first it's very frenetic and frenzied, and then it's almost like they're babies sucking on breasts.
Right.
you know, they calm down with their teeth sunk into each other.
It reminds me of that ancient Greek myth of like the babies feeding on the wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's extremely primal. And that kind of relates back to, I mean, I'm really reaching here, but how Alex shows Justine how to lure victims by causing car crashes, by kind of
showing her how to hunt.
Yeah, showing her how to hunt. Exactly. And also it goes back to this duality that the film has in all senses, because it's like showing her how to hunt by playing helpless and dead.
Right. Right. Exactly. And there's so much going on there with regard to the film's conception of womanhood, white womanhood specifically.
Yeah. And then specifically also thin white womanhood.
Right.
Which it explicitly mentions. Yeah.
Yes. There's another interesting scene where Alex says to Justine, "Have you lost weight? My cocktail dress fits you better." And she says, "You'd better not turn anorexic."
Yeah, she's like, "It's not a compliment. It's gross."
Yeah, it's not a compliment. It's gross.
Yeah, it's that impossibility of like,
right, there's this incredibly fine line for having an acceptable body. God, there's another really crushing eating disorder scene where Justine is bringing up a hairball in the bathroom because she's been chewing and sucking on her own hair for days, and when she comes out of the stall just looking, you know, disheveled and flushed, there's this very sweet round-faced girl there who tells her it comes up faster if you use two fingers. And then after Justine walks out of the bathroom, we see that girl like turn on this fake smile and start styling her hair in the mirror. And it's just so fucking crushing.
Yes. Yeah. Food is, it's this huge part of, I mean, obviously it's a movie about cannibalism, but it's just like eating and consuming and is positioned as so feminine. And it's something that is always on all the characters' minds. There's so many disgusting food scenes. Another question I had for you also was, this movie is really gross and you love gross things. And like, what are some of your favorite gross moments in this?
Definitely the hairball vomiting is so unbelievably disgusting. I was just like watching
it. How did they even film that? It's so awful.
Right.
Yeah.
Just terrified awe. And her eating of the finger. There's this sense, I mean, I know it's the title of the movie, but there is a real sense of sort of the toughness and the gumminess of raw meat.
Yes. Yeah. You can really sounds like,
oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Or when she's fucking her gay roommate and can't like come down, can't climax until she buries her teeth in her own arm and there's just blood leaking out everywhere as she like whimpers.
Yes, that's my favorite.
It's incredible. You know, it's a very sexy movie in a really repugnant way. So obviously I love it a lot.
Yes.
There's that wonderful part where Justine is standing in front of the mirror just vibing out to a song about necrophilia.
Yes, I love that part. I love the lyrics because it's translated from French to English, so it's not quite, it doesn't quite make sense. Yeah.
So, like, but it rules. It so does. So I like to fuck a dad.
It's so good. There's one part where it's just like, "Prince of Darkness of my heart, bat tattoo."
Yeah.
That song rules. Yeah, and that scene goes on for such a long time.
Yeah, it's like a minute and a half long while she's listening to this like French version of the typo negative guy.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So you mentioned the gay roommate. And there are a lot of queer undertones and subtext in Raw, but there's only one openly explicitly named queer character. And that is Adrienne, Justine's gay roommate, who she ends up having sex with later. And I find this relationship really interesting because there are so many films where queer women are positioned as sexually fluid and or like struggling with their sexuality, going back to men, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's so many of that. There's so much of that trope, and very few films feature men embodying that kind of sexual fluidity. So, you know, and this, their relationship is interesting too. When they fuck, the sex is so like primal, and Adrienne is like kind of scared of her, and
yeah.
And it was her virginity also, like she had never had sex before. And then she approaches him in class and he's like, I didn't fucking hide who I was for 20 years to now be having sex with women. So like, leave me alone.
Yep.
And yeah, I guess I don't have a specific question, but I just wanted to hear more about what you thought about that relationship, because I'm still kind of tackling it myself.
I thought it was incredibly fascinating. I mean, there's this openly queer man who she lusts after. You know, there's that scene where she watches him play basketball.
Oh my God.
And there's such like a focus.
Losing her mind. Yeah.
Right. She's like fully fucking zoning out, thinking about like, you know, eating him and also fucking him. And really, fucking is like this age old human ritual where we try to pretend that fundamental barriers don't exist between people, that you can collapse your personhood into another body. And cannibalism is an extension of that symbolically. You're actually taking the other person into you. And, you know, of course, as in all symbolic thinking, there does come a point where the reality of it breaks down. You're not bringing their consciousness into your body. You're not bringing their experiences into your body. You're just eating meat. Well, I don't know where I was going with that, but anyway.
Yeah, because she's like, she's trying to make this impossible connection with this impossible relationship.
Right. And he's afraid of her. You know, he keeps telling her, no, stop that. When she's coming at him very aggressively. And in the end, of course, she and her sister, who kind of play with him over the course of the movie and pressure and push him, eat him.
Yeah, brutally. And
yeah, she, you know, Justine wakes up in bed next to his partially devoured body. And it's like, well, that's what this was. You know, they have the normative dominant sexuality in this dynamic, and they took what they were entitled to.
Yeah, from this vulnerable person who,
right, you know, in effect, it's symbolic rape.
Yeah, exactly. They're flipping that power expectation in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was just incredibly fascinating. I'll be thinking about it for a long time.
Yeah, and also that sex scene is really hot.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and I mean,
as is the shower scene after they eat him.
Yes.
Whether Justine is washing blood off of Alex, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's that whole sequence. Yeah, and he... What I like about that sex scene too is like it's intentionally like they're fucking on the floor and all of his gay porn mags are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just very, there's a lot to unpack there that is really like daring. I really don't see a lot of art where people are unpacking the relationship between straight men and gay women. I mean, between straight women and gay men.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, so it's maybe like one of the only ones I've really ever seen. And how predatory straight women are towards gay men.
Yeah, right, because it's you know, it's something that you should be able to have.
Right.
It's something that you've been taught is yours to seduce and take, and there must be something wrong with you if it doesn't want you.
Right. So the ending of the film.
Heterosexuality is a bit of a trap.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an endorsement. This film is not an endorsement.
No.
So I want to talk about the ending.
Yeah, that's a good segue.
Yeah. So, so the ending of the film, basically, Justine is sitting with her father back at home over the kitchen table, and they're, you know, he's talking about, it's a really confusing moment because he's talking about Alex and he's like, oh, you know, she was our princess. We took her everywhere. Your mother would, you know, she would joke that I was her boyfriend. So there's kind of like even more incestuous stuff going on here. Mm-hmm. And then he switches the pronouns. Like we can't tell if he's talking now about Alex or if he's talking about his wife. And the horror registers on Justine's face before he gets to the reveal. So it's almost like I don't know if he was describing like an incestuous relationship with Alex because it's so unclear. And then he opens his shirt and there's all these like chunks of flesh taken out of his torso.
Yeah, he's completely mangled.
Yeah. From his wife who's like passed down this cannibalism.
Right.
So he's letting his wife and Alex like feed on him basically.
Right, right. It's quite an ending. It does not resolve anything. It does not give any catharsis. It's just like, I mean, in a sense, it's such a wonderful execution of something that American movies so often struggle to do, which show that, you know, the real monster is inside. And in this case, it's like, well, you thought that you were going through some terrible, isolated monstrosity, but actually that is the lens through which your entire life will be viewed. That is the culture in which you are situated. Your world is defined by this action that no one prepared you for. And I do think that there's merit in this read of an incestuous relationship with Alex, in part because of how tightly the mother is controlling everyone's diet.
Yes.
You know, she tells Justine, like she's a little girl, don't leave the table until you clean your plate. Which incidentally is a sick fucking thing to do to a small child.
Oh my God, what the fuck? My parents never did that to me.
No, mine did. It's like, it fucks you up.
That's so controlling.
Yeah, it's there's just no good reason for it. That was a very upsetting scene.
The food, the control that the mother exhibits is really upsetting throughout. If you have experienced that, a controlling parent.
It's very brutal. It's very angry. It's obviously like a lot more to do with her and her own experiences of life than any other individual. Yeah, I think the end is like a collapse of the idea that attaining your selfhood is monstrous, which is true, back into the somewhat discreet but also somewhat connected monstrosity of being raised by people.
It's like this inescapable thing, and that this monstrousness is all around you and part of you and right. Hidden, but also visibly damaging.
Yeah, it's something you can conceal with a shirt or whatever, but it's not something you can undo.
Yeah,
it's not,
I mean,
something you can escape.
Just like incest. Yeah, it's
right.
You know, there's so many layers to his little monologue at the end there, like so many different interpretations. And I mean, even the idea of like holding up a little girl as a princess who then goes on to like destroy you and eat you. It's, you know, really making fun of this idea of women as like fragile, because the whole movie is about these monster women.
Right. That the image of the waif that so much of Western culture revolves around is a cannibalistic image. I mean, it comes at the cost of the lives of all women who don't fit it, and even the women who do in different ways. So I think showing this archetype as having a bloody mouth is very, very apt.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the way that thin white women are like oppressed and also perpetrators is. Mm-hmm.
It's a complicated position to hold, you know, just like the one that we hold as white women who are incidentally garbage in a bunch of other different ways, but like we'll never know what it's like to not be white.
Yes. Yeah. It's. Yeah, and I really like that fatness is spoken about but invisible, because that's how it functions. So it's a very smart way to like visually capture how fatness functions in this paradigm, is by being spoken about but not being seen.
Right. It's a rhetorical tool for thin people to wave around.
Right, exactly. Well, this is a really excellent movie. Even just like talking about it enriched my enjoyment. Yeah. So, Gretchen, thank you so much for joining me. I'll let you go now.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for talking about this movie, and I'll see you all next month. Bye.
Première leçon de séduction, être une pute avec éducation. Se moquer des garçons, préférer l'équitation. S'amuser de la fellation, censurer l'appellation et assurer pendant l'action. Acide citrique et phéronome, faire grimper le métronome. 1, 2, 3, 4, stop, déplie mon âme, je vais te faire du bien. Tu vas m'adorer, quand je te ferai du mal, tu vas savourer. Entre nous, ça va pas durer, c'est ta faute, t'étais trop laid. Pour la nuit de noces, je vais te noyer dans ma piscine. Je boufferai tes os, tu t'étoufferas à la cyprine. Chérie, va faire du sport, tu feras un joli cadavre. Je pratique le sexe après la mort, connard. Je te préfère dur et froid, t'es moins bafard. Je pratique le sexe après la mort, le sexe après la mort. Je pratique le sexe après la mort, le sexe après la mort. La drogue me dit bibi, chouchou, je t'aime que pour le mili. Si mon nom c'est Dolly, niche en euro, j'suis trop girl. Il goûte au poison tous mes gris qui j'te défonce, même si t'es jolie. Mon cœur toco, c'est pas cochon, ça t'enclose toujours dans mon lit. Mec et moi, ça fait zéro cochon, plus pas égal, we love me. On veut pas faire du porno, mais on te pèse avec un god me. Si j'dis l'un, tu penses qu'uni. Quand j'dis en tas, tu penses money. J'préfère la coque en 1000 grammes plutôt qu'un bisou de ton ami. Gagner des thunes petits en la vie cimetière, oh oui, le seigneur des ténèbres sur mon cœur. Chauve-souris, danse devant moi, si, si. La fille de Chucky, si, si. Je m'en fous du 69, je veux juste du 666. Oh, oh, oh. Je m'en fous du 69, je veux juste du 666. Je m'en fous du 69, je veux juste du 666. Oh.